Welcome to Off Hours, a conversation between John Edwards and Chris Manning.
All right, a little bit of follow-up from our last episode when we were talking about some of our goals and how we decide on the things that we want to work on. So shortly after we recorded that episode, one of our favorite podcasts that we both of us listened to, Cortex, dealt with some of the similar ideas of goal setting. But they had a slightly different take on it that I liked. Instead of talking about specific goals, Gray and Mike were talking about yearly themes and how the theme sort of drives what they do in a year. I think it's worth listening to if you enjoyed that part of our show. I do like the idea of getting away from a specific goal and sort of focusing on that theme, because the theme can then drive you towards different things that you may not have thought about early on in the year, and is maybe a little bit more forgiving in some ways. And when I gave it some thought, I think the themes that I'm going to have for 2018 are going to be sharing knowledge and timekeeping. So I think that's what I'm focusing on for 2018.
Riffing off last episode, I have to say mine would just be tying up loose ends.
Now, we've had a few people who've contacted us since the episode where I talked about purchasing movements from Eterna, and a few people who've asked about pricing. And I wanted to address it a little bit. The pricing is a bit difficult to talk about for a few reasons. The first is that Eterna doesn't make their pricing public, and I'm a little bit hesitant to share specific details of that pricing publicly, just because they're not sharing that information publicly. But above and beyond that, it's a little bit different than buying a lot of things that people are used to. When you're purchasing these movements, there are a lot of different options available to you, not just in terms of the complications, but there's also differences in pricing based on the type of Geneva stripes, for instance, that you get on the piece, or not having Geneva stripes on the piece. Also, different types of plating options that are available to you. Obviously, the volume of units that you're buying, things of that nature. It's a bit difficult to give specifics about it because, again, it changes so dramatically. You can obviously change the price quite a bit based on the different types of finishing that you're getting. And also they have options for different, for instance, different fonts or different printing on things like the date wheels and whatnot. So there are a lot of different options available to you when you're doing that. Now, again, their pricing isn't really open to the public because they're not retailers. That's not what they're doing. Although they do have a line of watches that they sell, and that information is available on their website if you want to purchase an Eterna watch from them. And that's obviously cased and dialed and everything like that. But if you're just looking at watch movements, again, they don't really sell to the public like that. However, if you're a watchmaker and you're interested in getting information on it, on their movements, they are definitely open to discussing it, and they've been excellent to deal with. They've been certainly willing to discuss movement prices with me. I'm not a well-known watchmaker by any means. I'm not a larger brand. When I was purchasing the initial movements, I was only buying one movement at a time of a couple of different calibers, and they were happy to deal with me. So even small watch brands or watchmakers, they are happy to discuss pricing with you. So if you're in the industry and you're looking to purchase movements for watches, I highly recommend getting in contact with them. They've been excellent to deal with. And then I guess one last bit of follow-up. We have created a few different ways for people to ask questions to us. One is through our email address, hello@offhours.show. The other is using a hashtag on Twitter, #AskOffHours. If you have questions that you want to ask John or I about whatever it is that we do, could be watchmaking, could be just making things in general, development, whatever it happens to be. If you have some questions that you want to pose to us, either of those will get in touch with us. Every few episodes, if we've got some interesting questions, we'll try and put something together and maybe answer those questions if we think there's something interesting to talk about there.
SIHH, the Salon International de Haute Lingerie, happened just a few weeks back. That's the first major industry trade show that has happened since we started recording Off Hours. What do you think of the new releases at SIHH this year?
I always enjoy watching the coverage from these shows. It's and I'm hoping one of these years I get over for one of the shows and be able to see some of the stuff in person. It is a good chance to see some of the trends in the industry and where things are going. And this year in particular, there were a few things that really caught my eye, and there were some watches that definitely attracted my attention and gave me some ideas for design ideas for myself for the future. So yeah, I really enjoyed the coverage this year, and it was interesting seeing some of the trends this year. A few things that I noticed that have changed, and a few things that I'm happy with, a few things that I'm not.
May I ask what weren't you happy with?
There are a few trends that I think are starting to go away a little bit that I'm happy to see, but I think are still a problem. One of the things in particular is women's watches, the design of women's watches. I think there's always going to be a place in ladies' watches for, I guess, pieces that are more jewelry pieces and are not necessarily practical timepieces. And I'm seeing a trend away from, for instance, like jewel encrusted watches, and I'm happy to see that. But I still think that a lot of the watch design that's geared towards women is just too frivolous. And I would love to see some more interesting designs that aren't just, oh, hey, look at this. There's, you know, 1,000 diamonds on this watch. And that's the design aesthetic of it. It would be really nice to see, to see more interesting watches and more interesting watch design geared towards women. Or maybe stuff that's geared towards men who want a smaller watch that can also be worn by women. I think it's time to see something a little bit more interesting out of women's watch design than just here's a pile of stones on it.
Yeah, I think Cartier tends to do a pretty good job of delivering feminine pieces that aren't necessarily always encrusted or bejeweled in precious stones. And mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the purple dial and Royal Oak that AP released this year? Would you consider that a woman's timepiece?
Absolutely. I think that there are a lot of women who are wearing watches that are probably being designed for men originally, which is great. But of course, one of the problems with that is the trend in men's watches tends to be these relatively large watches, and that of course is difficult for people with small wrists to pull off. Like Tamara, for instance, cannot pull off a large watch. Her wrists are very small, and I think even something like the Royal Oak would probably be too large for her to pull off on her wrist. So while I know there certainly are people who can pull that off, I think it would be difficult for a lot of people to do. The one I saw that really caught my attention that is geared towards women, and I was a little bit surprised because I think it's a great design, and other than a few diamonds that are on it, I would totally wear this watch myself. Romain Gauthier's Insight Micro Rotor. Hmm. The thing that I found interesting about this watch, first off, they did a men's version of this watch last year, I think it was. This one is identical in size, in case size, to the one that they did last year that was directed towards men. I think it's around a 38 or 39 millimeter case. So I thought that was interesting that they chose not to differentiate the two designs by size, because that's a very common thing. But I love what they've done with this, especially the version with the black mother of pearl. I think it's a very striking design. The micro rotor, again, my only complaint about this watch is that the micro rotor has diamonds on the ladies' version of it, whereas the men's version does not have diamonds on it. I would have loved to, I'd love to see this watch with something other than diamonds there, you know, maybe a little bit of engine turning in there, something different. But I think that this watch is gorgeous. It's incredibly striking. And I'd love to see more designs like this where they're, you know, they're more interesting than just a bunch of diamonds on a watch.
Yeah. Romain Gauthier being just a very bespoke brand, I'm sure if you told him you didn't want the diamonds on the microwater, he would be more than happy to comply if you're willing to shell out the coin to acquire one of these pieces.
Yeah, at the price that they're at, I'm certainly not going to be in a position that I'm ever going to be able to afford one of these watches, unfortunately. But I'm sure at that price, if you said, hey, let's lose the diamonds, they probably would. But but looking at this watch, again, I would gladly put this watch on my wrist and wear it. I think this is a gorgeous design. I love the colors that are in it. I love the visual contrast of textures, and yeah, I'm happy to see that.
Another piece that, if I recall correctly, it actually does have a diamond bezel on it, but diamonds aren't really the front and centerpiece, and there might be a version of it without the diamonds as well. Cartier had a new piece this year called the Revelation. Something like 900 gold beads sandwiched between two pieces of sapphire with a sapphire image of the Cartier Panther in the crystal. So it's a very unique piece for women, where if you tilt the watch and play with it back and forth, the gold beads will fill in the visage of their panther and then slowly disappear and trickle down. It's the way the beads would falling through, say, an hourglass.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't seen that piece when I was looking through. That's a great idea. I like that design.
Yeah, very unique. Well, it's got the price tag to match.
Yes, unfortunately, something people will realize when they start looking through some of these watches is that none of these are inexpensive watches, and I will not be wearing any of these watches anytime soon, unfortunately. It's one of the reasons why I make pens, and one of the reasons why I'm making watches is that I can't afford many of the watches and pens that I want, so I'm making the things that I want instead.
Well, that's how F.P. Jean started, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, sticking with Cartier, one of the designs that did catch my attention was the Cartier Santos. And from what I understand, this is a reimagining of an older design watch that or an older style of watch that they did many years ago, and I'm a huge fan of what they've done with this. Now I'm a big fan of sort of the Art Deco era and a lot of the very bold graphic style of that, and this watch is great. I love the squareness of it while still using sort of rounded corners. I love the exposed screws around the bezel and holding the bracelet together. I love so much about this watch. I haven't really been a big fan of a lot of the Cartier design. I find it too jewelry-esque. I tend to prefer watches that are a bit more subtle. But this I love. I love the look of this. I love the graphicness of it, and it just looks great.
Their drive, which I believe they only just produced in 2016, has a very unique, very becoming aesthetic to it too. And they, I believe, for the first time, they released it in steel this year at SIHH.
Oh, really?
Which is also it's not round. It's not square. It's not a squircle or a hyper ellipse. It's got a unique shape all its own.
Yeah, or a tourneau. Yeah, yeah. It's not one of the classic shapes. And I think the other classic shape that Cartier tends to do is a rectangle with rounded corners on it. And I've never been a big fan of that. I think that probably works really well for people with small wrists. Being someone with larger wrists, I find that something that's too narrow doesn't look good on me. But this, I think, would look great. I think this is a really nice shape and really nice proportions without being massively large. Now, maybe some of that might be influenced by the fact that I've been wearing an Apple Watch for the last couple of years, and So the square watch aesthetic has become something I'm used to, just because that's what I've been seeing on my wrist for the last few years, but maybe that's what it is. But anyways, I'm a big fan of the way that this design looks.
Another reason I think Cartier has succeeded in making some very feminine pieces, or at least pieces that are targeted more towards the female side of the market without being ostentatious or overly blingy, is that they have a phenomenally talented watchmaker heading up their watchmaking division, who is a woman, Carol Forestier Kasapi, who's just a brilliant and very accomplished watchmaker. She first made her name for herself in a watchmaking competition back in the late 90s, where she developed as a student what is effectively the predecessor to the Ulysse Nardin freak. And she actually went on to work at Ulysse Nardin and helped bring that freak to market, and then has done some similar work at Cartier as well, with things like their Astral Tourbillon and whatnot. But I think having that feminine touch that high up in the company is what has enabled them to bring watches to market that do appeal to more of a female clientele.
There was an interview with one of the CEOs of the large brands, and I want to say that it was Patek, but I can't remember now for sure. And he had brought his wife in, who had worked as a designer in fashion before, to work on some women's watches for the brand, because he made the good point that not having a small wrist, not being a woman, it's difficult to design without understanding that aesthetic well. And not, it's easy for me to design something that I want to wear, because I just have to look at my wrist and imagine what I want. And there's, there's obviously some interest in that, but it's nice to hear that there's a woman heading their design team, and that they're taking advantage of that, because frankly, I think there needs to be more women designing watches for women. I think that's going to be the best way that we get better watches.
I was surprised to learn this year that the massive centerpiece watch that Langenzona makes every year for their booth at SIHH is actually a functional model. I learned that from Jason Heaton, who hosts the Grenado podcast with James Stacey. And it turns out that this is an actual functioning ticking model made primarily in aluminum for obvious reasons of weight. You wouldn't want a 15 foot across case of platinum dangling there in the middle of a booth. That would just be ungodly heavy.
Not to mention expensive.
That too. Yeah,
yeah, I have to say I'm a big fan of Langenzona. I like their aesthetics. In fact, in a lot of ways, there's a few German brands, and I like their aesthetic a lot more than some of the Swiss brands, the traditional Swiss brands. And I am a fan of their design. They do tend towards the large side on their cases. They're certainly not they're not going to be friendly to cuffs, shirt cuffs, that's for sure. That one may be a little bit too large, though. I think they may have gone a bit too far with a 15 foot one, but
definitely going to fail the cuff test.
But seriously, yeah, it's an impressive feat of engineering building this large watch. I'm a fan of the homage that they did, the 1815 that they did for to celebrate Walter Lange's life. Walter Lange passed away last year at SIHH, or at the same time, he wasn't there. But he passed away at the same time, and they did this 1815 homage to him. I like the style of it. Yeah, that huge model that they build is incredibly impressive. I hope to get a chance to see that in person one day.
And their triple split chronograph was also an impressive feat of engineering as well, which they released this year.
The double split is one that I've looked at and thought that would be a really great watch to own at some point. And the triple split just takes that one step further, and it's certainly an impressive feat of engineering they've managed there.
A split chronograph, or rattrapant, for anyone who might not be familiar is a chronograph, which is essentially like a stopwatch that is integrated with a normal timekeeping watch, wherein as the hands are traveling, there's actually another hand hiding beneath, say, your main seconds hand in a regular split chronograph. In a double split, you'll have the minutes mirrored as well. And then in the triple split, which Lang released this year, they're also mirroring the hours with another hand underneath it. And as these hands are traveling around the dial, you can actually measure two events simultaneously. And using a third pusher on the case, you can pause the hands, one set of hands, generally the ones that are running underneath, while the other hands that are superimposed over top continue to track the time. And then when you reset, the hands will fly back together. It's a really neat complication to play with and actually has a fair bit of utility under the right circumstance.
Yeah, I have an old Swiss pocket watch movement that was orphaned from its case, that's a split chronograph that it needs a little bit of TLC. I'm looking forward to rebuilding that and building a new case for it. It is a pocket watch movement, so it's not going to see a lot of use. I don't have a huge amount of need for a pocket watch and sort of daily wear, but I think it's going to be a fun movement to rebuild and to recase, because we don't see a lot of those split chronographs anymore, and I think it's a really neat, really interesting design sense and really interesting complication as well. As you say, it's practical if you're using it for timing anything.
Mind you, these days you're probably going to use far more sophisticated timing equipment for tracking sporting events and whatnot, but the technical chops that Lang has are very impressive, the finishing as well. Another standout watch in terms of finishing was Voutilainen's 217QRS. Not the easiest name to remember, but that was his new release this year at SIHH, and that featured an integrated retrograde date. So it uses a hand on the dial to indicate the date, and it's not done in a full circle, but rather in an arc. And as the hand moves around and transitions from the 31st to the 1st of the month, it will just gently make its way back to the 1st, rather than continuing its arc.
I'm always impressed with the work that Kari does and his team. I am a huge fan of his watches, and I always love to see the new pieces that he has out every year. But the finishing on his watches is second to none, and his complications are fascinating. I like to see what he does with his stuff, and he's always one of the very first watchmakers that I look up whenever there's a new show, so that I can see what he's released, because he is always doing interesting work, and it's always worth checking out.
And it just epitomizes craft.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's nice to see someone who is still independent and doing fascinating work. They're not producing a lot of watches. I remember hearing roughly how many watches they produce a year, and it's not, I don't think it's 1,000 watches a year, the team that's there, but they're doing fascinating work, and it's all at the highest level. So I love seeing that he's managed to maintain his independence from the big brands and still be able to produce these gorgeous watches every year.
Yeah, and part of maintaining that independence has required him to bring more and more of the work in-house. For a long time, he was having dials made by Vauchot, who also supplied Parmigiani Fleurier, where Voutilainen got a lot of his early training working under some of the master watchmakers. Being a small brand, it's hard to get high-quality dials ahead of the bigger groups who are willing to pay more and to throw their weight around. So he actually bought up a dial manufacturer a couple of years ago and has brought all of that in-house. So the engine turning that he's able to create and to pump out is incredible. And he's actually in the position now where he is supplying other makers, not just for his own watches, because he's got enough capacity there within his own brand that he's actually able to do work for brands beyond just his own watches.
Well, that certainly makes sense. And I know for myself, going down this path and looking to see what I can make versus what I can get done, having the ability to do this stuff in-house is very liberating. And it is challenging trying to find people who are willing to do high quality work for you if they're, you know, if you're looking outside of your own shop to do it. So I can appreciate that that he's done that. And his engine turn dials are gorgeous. I'm a huge fan. Being an engine turner, I'm a huge fan. I certainly look at his dials as inspiration for some of the work that I'm looking at doing. So yeah, it's nice to hear that that he's managed to do that and that he's managed to expand the business to be able to do work for other people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got nothing but the highest praise for Voutti Lennon's work. So another interesting bit of engine turning I've noticed recently, and this isn't something new to SIHH 2018, but Montblanc has taken their logo and actually turned that into an engine turning profile or motif. And they've done some neat things with that in a number of their watches. I believe it's, I don't know for certain, but I think it's Villeray, which Montblanc also owns, that does their engine turning work for them. Quite a neat look. Definitely a look I've not seen on any other brand for good reason, being that it is their logo. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that, given your expertise in the area.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the 4810, which seems to be the dial they've done this on, and it's a great look. I also like the fact they've chosen to offset the center of the pattern. So this is something, if you're taking a look at this watch, this is done on a rose engine, and they've created a custom rosette for that rose engine to be able to do this work. This is certainly not something that you're ever going to find on somebody else's engine, unless they do work specifically for Montblanc, because this is not a typical pattern. But I think that the choice of, well, first off, their logo I think works well for this kind of work. One of my big complaints about engine turning on watches is people tend to focus around the center of the dial because it's very easy to set up. You can put it into a chuck and it's automatically centered at the center of the dial where the hands are, and it's very, very easy to do that work. And I think it's kind of lazy of most engine turners to do that. There's certainly a time and a place for it, and there are certain elements that definitely work best if they happen to be concentric with that center. But I think too many people sort of work from that center and never experiment beyond that. So I like seeing this. The version I'm looking at is a tourbillon movement, and they've got the tourbillon exposed at the 6 o'clock position, and that's what they've chosen to center their pattern on. And you know, that's a great design choice. They've also chosen not to engine turn the entire dial. Some of it is at a lower, sort of the lower third, I guess, is another plate down below that's been exposed, and you can see the Geneva stripes on that plate instead of the engine turning. So it's nice to see a little bit of contrast there, and the way they've chosen to convert their logo into this pattern is great. I think it works brilliantly. And it, even though it doesn't match up with any of the numbers, you know, any of the hour numbers, for instance, on here, I think it still works well. And I think this is a great use of engine turning that isn't the standard designs that you see with, let's say, a Breguet.
Now moving down market in their line a little bit, I was very surprised by what Montblanc turned out. It's more sporty side of their lineup. Now, I know that back in, I think it was 2016, the designer, David Serrato, who primarily responsible for bringing Tudor back to more of a prominent position in the market with their heritage line and things like the Black Bay. He worked at Tudor for close to a decade, then moved on to Montblanc. And you can see his fingerprints without question on this new lineup of entry-level Mont Blanc timepieces that are cased in stainless steel. And I was quite impressed with the look of these pieces, as well as the technical chops. I'm not the biggest fan of the fact that they've integrated the mountain into the logo type. It serves its purpose in calling out the sportiness of the watches. I think I would have preferred to see the mountains set just above the logo type, but to each their own. Beyond that, I was just very impressed with the pieces.
Yeah, it is nice to see a brand bringing out a lower end watch. I think that was actually one of the trends I think I saw in this year's watches. A lot of movement sort of down market, and obviously some of these, when I say down market for some of these brands, we're still talking about watches that are extremely expensive. But it was interesting to see a bit of movement down into, sub $10,000 watches, for instance, from brands that were rarely doing that. I think Patek ended up releasing a few watches that were in the quote unquote more reasonable